नमो महाबदनाय कृष्ण प्रेमा प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरद्वेषे नमः नमो ब्रह्मण्य देवाय गो ब्रह्मनाहिताय च जगतिताय कृष्णाय गोविंदाय नमो नमः नमो ब्रह्मण्य देवाय गो ब्रह्मनाहिताय च जगतिताय कृष्णाय गोविंदाय नमो नमः This sloka is describing the glory of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Although the Lord is equal to all, He is the friend and the father of all living beings. He is especially affectionate toward the Brahmins and the cows. Why is this? Because the goal of life is for all living beings to be freed from the sufferings due to conditional consciousness based on ignorance and illusion. The real platform of happiness is in knowledge of our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. It is said in Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanastu mam bharata daivim prakritim ashrata bhajantyananyamana saugyatva bhutatim avyayam. The Mahatmas, the great souls, they are under the protection of the divine energy of the Lord. Therefore, in great happiness, they are constantly engaged in serving the Lord with love. Essentially, it is the nature of every living being to know God and to love God. But due to ignorance and due to conditioning of material enjoyment, we have forgotten the essence of our real identity. Therefore, the Lord, who is all merciful, is always calling the conditioned souls suffering in this material world back to the real consciousness within themselves. And although, as the Paramatma, the Lord, who is seated within the heart of everyone, is giving us many indications, because we are constantly experiencing life through the external forms via our senses. Therefore, we cannot hear or perceive the divine presence or message of the Lord within our heart. Thus, the Lord speaks through the Brahmins so that we can hear His voice through our senses and traverse the path toward real peace, real prosperity for the benefit of all. And the cows, they provide, like our own mother, the most important and nourishing food. And this food provided by the cows in the form of milk nourishes our brain with the finer tissues by which it can grasp the subtle conceptions of spiritual understanding. Therefore, it is said in the Vedas, that you can judge a society, how spiritual or material it may be, by the simple method of seeing how the cows are being treated. To the degrees the cows are being treated with compassion and mercy, they are happy and feeling protected. To that degree you will find spirituality, piety, and religion within that society. And to the degree we see the cows in anxiety, being exploited, and being murdered, to that degree we will find sinfulness, lack of spiritual awareness, and gross materialism. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit was inquiring from Shukadev Goswami about the real goals of life. And Shukadev Goswami was explaining to him the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna in the 10th canto. How Lord Sri Krishna personally came to this world in the form of a cowherd boy to show the importance of giving respect to the Brahmins, those spiritual personalities who have surrendered their lives to the Lord, and giving protection to the cows. Maharaj Parikshit was finding great satisfaction in hearing these narrations. In fact, he approached Shukadev Goswami with words of glorification, that the more I hear the pastimes of the Lord and his devotees, the more I am anxious to hear. Dear Shukadev, this message that you are narrating in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam is completely the opposite of material sound vibration. When we may hear a material sound vibration, we enjoy it for some time. But after hearing it again and again and again and again, it becomes very tiresome. But spiritual sound vibration is ever increasing in the taste of sweetness that one can derive from it. Just like there was a very famous poem, "A rose is a rose is a rose." And this became very famous because it sounds very sweet. Because the rose is very sweet, therefore when we think of this, we think of the rose and it is very sweet. A rose is a rose is a rose. Now you say it once, twice, 3 times, 5 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, and you never want to hear this poem again. You become very tired of it. You don't even want to see a rose again. A rose is 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 a rose. How many times can you say it? Even the greatest literary appreciators, they can only say it a few times before they want to talk about something else. But devotees of the Lord, many great saints in the sannyasa ashram as well as in the grihastha ashram, they chant the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, 2-3 hours a day. I know some people that chant it 12 to 14 hours a day. I know some men in Vrindavan who have been chanting every day for the past 70 years for 12 to 14 hours a day. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And are they tired of it? Do they want to hear something else? They want to hear it more and more and more. The more they chant it, the more their thirst to taste more of the mantra awakens within their heart. Because you see, in transcendental sound vibration, the sound vibration is none different than the object in which it is describing. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Ras Vigra. This means that in the name of Krishna, all the opulence, all the sweetness, all the glory, all the divine presence of God is within his name in full. By chanting the name Krishna, by chanting the name Rama, you are directly in contact with the supreme source of everything. Gradually through this process, our heart becomes purified and we can experience directly the Lord within His name. Haridas Thakur, one of the great associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would chant the names of Krishna 3 lakhs every day before eating or sleeping. And when he was in his old age, an invalid, he still continued this vow of chanting. And the Muslims, who at that time were in the rule of India, the emperor did not want this Sanatan Dharma faith, this Hindu faith, to spread. Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family. So they arrested him. Why you are chanting these Hindu names of God? Why don't you give it up? He explained to them, what is this Hindu-Muslim? This is all nonsense. God is one. Sanatan Dharma is the essence of all religions. Sanatan Dharma means to know God and to love God and to surrender to God. Islam means to submissively surrender to God. It doesn't mean to be a Muslim. Sanatan Dharma means to surrender to the Supreme Lord. Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Moksha Ishyami Masacha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. Religion means to love God and to surrender to God. And the most glorious method of surrendering to God is to cry out His holy name and glorify His name. This is not a sectarian process. So of course what happened is the Hindu priests, who at that time were very corrupt, they were called Smarta Brahmins. They were simply professionals. They were performing rituals, performing puja, giving diksha as a profession. They had no realization or love or compassion toward the fallen souls of the age. They simply wanted to exploit them for money and take advantage of their high birth. So they did not like Haridas Thakur, because Haridas Thakur was teaching that anyone who chants the name of God and develops love of God is higher than the Brahmins. So the Brahmins were thinking, my God, if he teaches this message and everyone chants, we'll be out of business. We'll go bankrupt. And you know how businessmen, they are willing to do anything and everything to make their business strong. Huh? So they were thinking, we have to somehow or other devise a plan to rid ourselves of this competitor. And at the same time, the high priests at the time of the Muslim religion, they didn't like him because so many Muslims were converting to become his followers, chanting the names of Krishna. So all the priests together came to the zamindar and to the governor, and they complained, this man must be arrested and killed. So Haridas Thakur came into the assembly of these very, very powerful government officials. And when they saw his beauty, they saw his humility, they saw the compassion of his heart, their hearts melted. They said, Haridas, personally, we are the kings, we are the governors. We actually want to be your disciples too, but we cannot, because what will the people say? But these people are complaining so much about you. We ask you just one thing, just if you have to chant, chant private somewhere. But not so loud. Stop telling others about this, and we'll let you go. But if you continue in this way, we'll have to kill you. Haridas Thakur, he said, that to end my life, that is no problem. I have to die anyway. But to give up chanting the name of God, that is a million, billion, trillion times worse than death. He said, you take my body, cut it into a million pieces, and take each piece and cut it into a million pieces. Cut each of those pieces, cut it into a million pieces. And find each one of those tiny little specks and cut it into a million pieces. And you find that each one of those little insignificant atomic specks will be chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Because the sweetness, the taste of the transcendental sound of Krishna's glorification is eternally blissful to the heart. So Maharaj Parikshit was describing that the pastimes of the Lord are of the same nature as the name. Factually, when the Lord's glories are being chanted, the Lord is enacting his pastimes through transcendental sound vibration right here and now. It is not that the Lord simply performed the lifting of Govardhan Hill 5,000 years ago. But because he is absolute, wherever devotees repeat the narration of the Lord lifting Govardhan Hill, at that time, that pastime is being enacted if we hear it with faith. So Maharaj Parikshit was finding great delight in hearing the message of Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, O Goswamiji, please continue to narrate more and more and more about the Leela of the Lord. My thirst for it increases the more I drink. He said, unfortunately, those who are very poor-hearted and attached to sense gratification and material enjoyment, they do not seek out the endless, limitless pleasure of your transcendental narrations. Therefore, my conclusion is these persons are the most unfortunate creatures on earth. One who takes this rare human birth and does not take pleasure in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord are most unfortunate. He said, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, one whose tongue is not glorifying the Lord, his tongue is like the croaking tongue of the frogs. One whose ears are not hearing the glories of the Lord, his ears are like the snake holes in the sand. One whose eyes do not relish the beauty of the form of the Lord in the temple and the beauty of the Lord's devotees, his eyes have no more value than the tail of the peacock. And one whose head does not bow down to the Lord, his head is simply only so much excess weight on his body. When Shukadeva Goswami heard this, he became very pleased. When the spiritual master sees the disciple is sincere to perfect his life by hearing submissively spiritual subject matter, the spiritual master becomes most delighted. And then he began to narrate one of the most beautiful stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This story is famous throughout all the world. We have all heard it. But unlike material subject matter, the more we hear these stories, the more each time we learn something new and fresh to help us in our spiritual life. Shukadeva Goswami, he explained that once there was a very, very pious and religious Brahmin. His name was Sudama. He wasn't an ordinary Brahmin, but he was a true devotee of the Lord. His life, his soul, was only dedicated to pleasing the Lord in every way. Therefore, this Brahmin Sudama He was not at all concerned with his own material situation in life. As a Brahman, he simply accepted whatever came by the ways of destiny. He did not ever endeavor in any way, shape, or form for the maintenance of his body or for the maintenance of his family. But he was always very peaceful, always very merciful to all living beings. Because of this, the great Sudama, he was very poor. His house was practically unlivable. It was so simple. He only had one set of clothes. They were torn, and even when they were washed, they still appeared very dirty. And he had so little food that he was barely living. Therefore, he was very lean and thin, and his bones were coming out of his body. And his poor wife was in the same condition. So one day his wife, with great humility and respect, she approached her husband. We should understand that his wife was not at all a demanding person. She factually wanted nothing for herself. She was content simply to serve her husband in his mission. She expected nothing beyond his satisfaction. But it caused grief to her heart to see her husband in this condition. So with great humility, she approached Sudama Vipra. And she said, "My dear Sudama, you are very dear friends with Lord Sri Krishna, Dwarkadish, the king of Dwarka. He is living in Dwarka in 16,108 palaces. And the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, has expanded herself in each one of these palaces. And we all know that the Lord is very kind to his devotees. The Lord will do anything for his devotee. The Lord will personally give his life to please his devotees. He will personally extend himself to any limit to satisfy his devotees." Sudama, at least we should have the bare maintenance of the necessities of life. It will be absolutely no trouble for Krishna. He will be glad, he will be overjoyed to give you a little prosperity. It will make him happy. Do you think he likes to see us in this condition? Kindly go to Dwarka and request your good friend Krishna. Just for a little wealth. She requested Sudama again and again and again. But Sudama refused to go. He could not conceive of asking Krishna for anything. "Except, my Lord, how can I serve you? What can I give you?" This is the nature of a devotee. And this is the nature of the Lord. Amongst the pure devotees of the Lord, there is an endless competition. The Lord constantly wants to give to his devotees, and the devotees never want to take anything from the Lord, but want to give to him. And in the spiritual realm, there is always this very tricky competition between the two. There is a story about Srila Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami was the elder brother of Rupa Goswami. So one time Rupa Goswami wanted to cook a feast for Sanatan because it was his birthday. But they were simple Babaji's living in Vrindavan. They had no money. They would simply beg from door to door for some chapatis every day. So how to cook a feast? But he was thinking that my brother has gone out today. I want to somehow or other cook a nice feast for him. So at that time, a young girl came to the house and said, I heard it's Sanatan's birthday today. Yes, yes. Well, I brought very nice vegetables and milk products and ghee and everything. Make a nice feast for him. He said, ah, very nice. So he made a beautiful, wonderful feast. He was an excellent cook. And Sanatan Goswami came back. Ah, it was this wonderful feast. He said, where has all this food come from? This beautiful little girl came. I don't know who she was. She had all these pots on her head and she gave me, can you describe this little girl? He described. Ah, Sanatan said, that is Srimati Radharani. How have you done this? You have engaged Radharani in my service. This is horrible. I am her servant. She is my lord and mistress of life. And she is bringing food to me. How can you do this to me? The master should not serve the servant. The servant must always be the servant of the master. But you see, the Lord is so obliged to the love of his devotee that the Lord becomes subordinate to be the servant of his devotee. That is the natural inclination of God. So Sudama Vipra was not interested. But after the repeated requests of his very humble and virtuous wife, he finally decided, I must satisfy her. I will go to Dwarka just to have darshan with Sri Krishna. Even if I don't ask him, even if I do not ask him for anything, just to see him will be the greatest pleasure of my life. So he decided to go. But he said to his wife that I must bring him some gift. He is the greatest of all personalities. What do we have to give? So she went to some neighbor's house and she took 4 handfuls of chipped rice, the cheapest, most inexpensive of all foods. And she put it in an old piece of cloth, like a handkerchief, and she wrapped it up and she said, here, you give this to Krishna. He said, all right. And immediately he went. And on his way, he was thinking, ah, after so many years, again, I will see the Lord of my life, Sri Krishna. So he came to the outer limits of Dwarka. Dwarka was a very highly fortified fort. There was 3 military encampments that he had to pass through. And it was very, very difficult to pass through these military encampments. But all of the soldiers had orders that any Brahmins or holy men, you must escort them through. Each of these military encampments had a very, very large, large gate separating from the next. Sudama Vipra passed through all without any difficulty. And then when he came into the inner city of Dwarka, he beheld with his eyes the most inconceivable sight. There were 16,108 palaces, each one far excelling the beauty and the opulence of the abode of Indra, the king of heaven. And he walked into the main palace. As he walked in, Lord Sri Krishna was sitting on the bedstead with Rukmini. And he saw Sudama coming from a small distance. And immediately he got off his bed. And he greeted Sudama. This poor Brahmin with torn clothes, dirty clothes, emaciated due to weakness and lack of nutrition. To the mortal eyes, he would appear like the common beggar in the street. But he was not a beggar. He was the wealthiest of all men in creation. When Krishna saw him, he stood up, and with tears of love in his eyes, he approached Sudama and embraced him with great affection. And as he embraced him, his heart felt great ecstasy, and tears flowed from his eyes. And then he took Sudama and he put him on his own bedstead. And then he brought him nice fresh water, and he brought him fresh fruits. And then with his own hands, he washed the lotus feet of Sudama Vipra. And he took that water that had cascaded off the beautiful feet of Sudama, and the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, Shyam Sundar, Vasudev, he sprinkled that water on his head for his own purification. And he sprinkled it on his wife's head, Rukmini, for her purification. The Supreme Lord, the yogis, they perform lifetimes of tapasya for the slightest glimpse of darshan of the lotus feet of the Lord. And the jnanis, for lifetimes, they scrutinizingly study the Vedic literatures and the scriptures of the world just for a glimpse of the feet of the Lord. And the devotees, they surrender their lives, body, mind, words, and soul, just to get a glimpse of the lotus feet of the Lord. But the Lord, where is he finding his pleasure? In the feet of his devotees. This is the power of bhakti. The impersonalist philosophers, they say that if you perform religious discipline and the process of yoga, you can become God. But the bhaktas are not interested in becoming God. In fact, it is an unpalatable thought to become God. One simply wants to love God and serve God. And by the power of that love, you can become better than God. How is that possible? A devotee never thinks he's better than God. But God comes to wash your feet. Sudama Vipra, the Lord was sitting at his feet, sprinkling the water on his head with great joy. And then the Lord smeared his body with sandalwood pulp mixed with camphor and aguru. And then he lit the most fragrant incense and offered it to Sudama Vipra. And then he offered arti with the ghee lamp and the incense, and the flower, and the handkerchief. And while all this was going on, the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, Rukmini Devi, in order to give comfort to Sudama Vipra, with her own lotus hand, fanned him with the chamara. After all these loving expressions of welcome to his devotee took place, then Lord Sri Krishna, he began to speak to Sudama. How fortunate I am tonight, today, that the holy feet of a great Brahmin like you have blessed my house. Sudama, you know you are my dear friend. How are you? Please tell me. When the ladies of the house, the maid servants of Sri Rukmini Dwarakadish, saw this, they were struck with wonder. Who was this skinny little dirty man? Krishna embraced him. They were talking amongst themselves. Krishna embraced him. Did you see that? Krishna does not embrace anyone. The only person we have ever seen him embrace is Balaram and sometimes Rukmini. No one else does he embrace. Who is this person? What is his position? What is his glory? Sudama Vipra and Lord Sri Krishna sat for many hours intimately discussing. Krishna said to Sudama, that do you remember? Together we were classmates at the Gurukul of our spiritual master, Sandipani Muni. And do you remember all the wonderful things we learned from him? Krishna said, I remember one thing, I'm sure you will remember. One day, the wife of our Guru Maharaj asked us to collect some firewood. And we were collecting wood. And we got lost. And all of a sudden, the wind began to blow very fast. And dust came through the air, and we could not see anything anywhere. And then the sky became very dark. The sun set. And there was lightning and thunder. And then torrents of rain. No, it wasn't rain. It was like the rainfall of devastation. And the ground became muddy and flooded. And we were young boys. We became very afraid. We did not know which direction to go. We'd go in one direction, and then another direction, and then the next direction, and then another direction. And we were thinking, where is our home? Where is our guru? And we took each other by the hands. And through the whole night, we simply wandered through the darkness of the forest. And the next morning, Sandipani Muni, our Guru Maharaj, he learned that we were out all night. So he sent all his disciples through the jungles to look for us. And alas, calling our names like our own father, he found us in the thick of the forest. And when we saw our Guru Maharaj, do you remember how happy we were? How we ran and we bowed to his feet and how he embraced us? And what he spoke to us? He said, my dear children, just for me, you have undergone so much trouble. This is the perfection of your life. The spiritual master gives transcendental knowledge, and it is the duty of the disciple. Tadvidi pranipate na pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnani nasvata darshana. To inquire submissively from the guru and to render service, humble, menial service. And when the disciple is willing to accept tribulation, pain, and suffering in order to please the spiritual master, that is the only way that he could repay his debt to the guru. And when one sees that the disciple is willing to accept any inconvenience simply for the smallest pleasure of the guru, the spiritual master is so satisfied that he bestows all his blessings and all his mercy on such a worthy and qualified disciple. And then Sandipani Muni prayed. He said, my dear Krishna and Sudama, I bless both of you today. That all Vedic knowledge will be remembered by you at all times. and that whatever you desire in life will be fulfilled. And that you will always have peace, happiness in all circumstances. And then Sudama Vipra, hearing this narration, his heart choked up with ecstasy. He began to speak to Lord Krishna. My Lord, all my sacrifices, all my austerities, everything has become a success only because you are allowing me to be your friend. My Lord, there is no need for you to have a spiritual master. You are the absolute truth. You are the Jagat Guru, the master of all. But just to show all living beings that everyone must have a spiritual master to understand God, you accept a spiritual master yourself. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yad yad acharati sthrestas tad tad evetarosana sayat pramanam kurute lokastharanu vartate. What great men do, common men follow in his footsteps. Whatever example the great men do, all the world pursues. Therefore, my Lord, although you are the knower of past, present, and future, you are in the heart of every living being as the Paramatma. You are Vedaishta Sarvera Hameva Vedyo Vedantakrit Veda Vedeva Chaham. Although you are the author of the Vedas and the knower of all the Vedas, still you accept the Guru to learn the Vedas. It is inconceivable. Why? Only to show all humanity that however learned you are, however brilliant you may think you may be, however pious and religious your family may be, without accepting a bona fide spiritual master as one's guide in life, no one can understand the Vedas. No one can understand the truth of what is God. Therefore, my dear Lord, how sweet and beautiful is this pastime, that you became the humble menial servant of your guru. And how lucky I am that I got to be a part of that Leela. Krishna said to Sudama, that's my dear Sudama, it is true that I am the Paramatma within everyone's heart. And I am the witness of everyone's every act, every word, and every thought. And therefore, in order to guide society properly, I am very much expecting great Brahmins like you to establish the proper system of Varna Ashram for all humanity to follow. Varna Ashram means Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Brahmacharyas, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis. Krishna told Sudama that Chatur Varna Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. That according to one's natural qualities and one's actions, one is categorized in this Varnashram system. Nowhere does Krishna say anything about birth. He says guna and karma, he does not mention janma. And this is the great disgrace and pollution of society, especially in India. That persons with no qualifications, simply because they are born in a particular family, they expect the respect deserved by that caste. The caste system is a total pollution and corruption of the original pure science given by God himself. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes what are the qualities of a Brahmin. Peacefulness, self-control, mercifulness. He's learned in the scriptures. He's not possessive. His whole life is simply dedicated as a sacrifice to the upliftment of humanity. If one does not have these qualifications, he is not a Brahman. It has nothing to do with how you're born. If you're born in an untouchable families, but you have these qualities, you should be respected as a Brahman. And if you are born in a Brahman family, but you have the qualities of an untouchable, you should be understood to be untouchable. Sudra. It is a question of one's qualities. So Krishna was appreciating Sudama for being a pure-hearted and genuine Brahman. And then Lord Krishna looked at Sudama and he said, I think that you have brought me some gift. I think your wife has prepared some nice food to offer to me. And Sudama was feeling very much ashamed. He was looking around at this beautiful palace and he just tasted the finest foods that Krishna offered him. And he looked at Rukmini, the goddess of fortune herself, and he's thinking, how am I going to give Krishna this paltry offering of chipped rice? He said, no, Krishna, I have not brought anything. Krishna said, Sudama, do you think that I taste anything material? I only taste the love of my devotee. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. If one even offers me a leaf, a little water, a flower, with devotion, it brings me the greatest pleasure and happiness. Sudama, you are my devotee. Even if you have only brought me a little chipped rice, because of your love, it will be the most palatable, sumptuous feast for my heart. But no, if a wealthy man offers me the most valuable things, the most valuable gifts, the most succulent preparations, if they are offered with pride, if they are not offered with humility and devotion, I do not care to accept those things. They mean nothing to me. Krishna said to Sudama, do you think I am in need of anything? I am the supreme proprietor of everything that exists. But even the smallest offering by the poorest, simplest devotee, if it is offered with love, it means more to me than my whole abode of Vaikuntha. And then Krishna told Sudama that you have voluntarily accepted a life of poverty because you are not at all interested in the things of this material world. This is the proof of your knowledge. Many people boast that they are knowers of the truth. But the real test of one who really knows what is the truth is that he is detached from material enjoyment. Therefore, Sudama, you have absolutely no affinity to possess anything of this world because you know everything belongs to me. This is your glory. You are not attached to sense gratification, but you are only attached to serving God. And therefore, you are the wealthiest man in all of creation. One who possesses this love is the wealthiest man in all of creation. But even if one is a multi-billionaire, without this love, his heart is like a ghetto. It is poverty. It is worthless. Real wealth is an internal condition of consciousness. Because this external show cannot satisfy anyone. But then Krishna explained to Sudama, but there are some very wealthy people. But they, in their hearts, they are always seeing how everything is my property. And they are using everything in my glorification. Therefore, those wealthy people, even great kings living in palatial buildings, they satisfy me equally. He explains that I am setting this example and you are setting the other example. Krishna said, although I am God, I am trying to set the proper example for humanity. Here I have 16,108 palaces. Huh? I have great wealth. But every day I am giving charity. Every day I am doing the puja. Every day I am doing the religious acts to show that even the wealthiest men in creation, their wealth is not a disqualification for spiritual life, so long as they are not attached to greed. So long as they are seeing God's energy everywhere and dedicating everything they do and everything they earn in God's glorification. And you, Sudama, are setting the example of how a Brahmin can live with absolutely nothing and please the Lord with the ultimate wealth of your love. So Sudama, please give me the chipped rice. And then Krishna, he knows everything. He doesn't have to look very hard. He saw hanging from Sudama's shoulder was this little bag of chipped rice, and Krishna snatched it from him. And he opened it. And when he saw this chipped rice, he said, ah. He said that simply by my taking one morsel of this chipped rice, the whole universe will be satisfied. Not only you, Sudama. Bhagavatam describes that God is like the root of the tree. When Krishna is nourished, the whole creation is nourished. If you water the root of the tree, every leaf, every branch, every twig, everything is satisfied. So similarly, when we satisfy Krishna, the root of all that exists, aham sarvasya matayo, then everyone becomes nourished by that loving service to the Lord. And then Krishna, with great pleasure, he ate one morsel of that rice. And he went to take the next, and Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, stopped him with her hand. And she said, my dear Lord, anyone who satisfies you with even one morsel of bhoga that is offered with love, that person is destined to have all prosperity, both in this world and in the next. Krishna is Lakshminath. He is the husband of the goddess of fortune. If one offers with love and devotion within one's home food to Narayan, then Narayan himself guarantees that he will enter into your home to accept that food. And there's nowhere Narayan goes that Lakshmi does not also come. And wherever there is Lakshmi, there is all good fortune. So there is no need to worry about our material or spiritual condition of life. If we know we are satisfying the Lord by humbly offering him our devotion, then Lakshmi and Narayan will live within our home. They will live within our life, and there will be no shortage. So after this most sweet and wonderful Leela, Sudama Vipra bid Lord Sri Krishna goodbye. And then he began to walk home. And he was filled with ecstatic love. He was simply remembering how Krishna embraced me, how he washed my feet, how he put me on his own bed, how Rukmini fanned me, how he spoke so intimately with me. So merciful is the Lord. How the Lord loves his devotees. How the Lord loves his devotees. How the Lord will do anything and everything for his devotee who surrenders to his lotus feet. He is the most wonderful, merciful, and suitable master to take shelter of. And he was just enraptured in divine ecstasy, thinking of the mercy of the Lord. And then as he came close to his home, he began to think, how will I explain to my wife? I did not ask Krishna for anything. But certainly she will understand. And then when he came to the property of his residence, lo and behold, what he saw, he could not believe. There was the most beautiful palaces made out of the finest marble, bedecked with jewels and gold, towering into the sky. And between the palaces, there were beautiful parks with lakes, with flocks of auspicious birds singing delightful songs, and peacocks dancing, and swans swimming, and lotus flowers blooming everywhere. And there were the most beautiful, beautiful human beings strolling through these parks singing beautiful songs. He was thinking, where am I? And all of a sudden, some people spotted him. And beautiful, beautiful human beings. They looked like demigods. They were bedecked with the finest clothes and ornaments. And musical bands following behind him. They all ran to him with smiles upon their faces to greet him. And they put garlands around him and told, welcome home. And then he saw his beloved wife. And she approached him. She approached her husband. Her eyes were swollen with tears. She was so choked up, she could not say a word. All she could do was bow her head at his feet. And in her heart, she was embracing him. And Sudama looked at his wife. She had beautiful clothes and beautiful jewelry. She looked like the wife of a demigod. And his eyes filled with tears, and he was choked up. He was thinking, how is this possible? This can only happen by the mercy of Krishna. My beloved friend, I did not even ask him for anything. But simply because he was satisfied with a little chipped rice, look at what he has given me in return. He could not say a word to his wife, both being speechless, not at the great fortune and opulence that they had attained. This is not what brought them joy and ecstasy, but the sweetness of the love of Krishna upon them that overwhelmed their hearts. And in complete silence, with their hearts overflooding with devotion, ecstasy, they both walked into the house. And then his good wife brought him to his quarters. And when he saw his quarters, he was struck with wonder. Even Indra had never seen such quarters as this. Everything was structured out of transparent marble. And the couches and the beds were made out of the finest ivory, decorated with precious emeralds and stones and jewels and diamonds and gold. And there were beautiful canopies, and there were strings of the finest pearls decorating in all directions. And everything he saw in his house, he did not see it. That how I can enjoy. But he simply saw Krishna in everything. He saw Krishna's mercy in everything. He saw all of his wealth, all of his fortune as the divine blessing of God. And therefore, whatever he saw simply increased his love for Krishna. He and his wife lived in that setting for many years. But they never considered themselves the proprietors or the enjoyers. But everything they had, they utilized for the pleasure of God. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yat karoshi yadashnashi yaj duhoshi dadasi yat yat tapasya sikonte yat tat kurushva madharapanam. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away should be done as an offering of love to me. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shanti mrichchati. Lord Sri Krishna describes in Gita that one who sees me, the proprietor of everything that exists, and who uses everything for my enjoyment and trusts that I am the loving friend of my devotee, such a person attains the ultimate peace of life. So you see, this story of Sudama Vipra teaches us, whether we are a rich man or a poor man, doesn't matter. It's not that you have to become poor to get the mercy of God. And it's not that you have to become rich to get the mercy of God. You simply have to become humble to get the mercy of God. What does it mean to be humble? That I am nothing. I am simply dependent on the mercy of the Lord and his devotees. And whatever I have, let me, with remembrance of God, with love for God, let me use everything for his pleasure. I have a family. This is God's family. It's not my family. Let me raise this family in a wonderful way for the pleasure of the Lord of my life. Let me raise them the way he wants them to be raised, so that they never have to suffer birth and death again. So that they can live a happy life in this world, a prosperous life in this world, and they can attain real peace and return to Vaikuntha. This is human civilization. So Shukadeva Goswami ends this narration of Sudama Vipra by offering the benediction that anyone with a sincere heart and with faith hears this most holy lila, that person will understand how Krishna loves his devotee. And anyone who understands how Krishna loves his devotee will want nothing else in life as a goal except to be Krishna's devotee and to have that love, and will be willing to do anything or give anything to have that love, that relationship, that friendship with Krishna. And he offered the benediction that anyone who hears this story with faith, all prosperity will be upon him, because he will have the supreme blessings of the goddess of fortune, and he will very soon return to the spiritual world by Vaikuntha. Indeed, Shukadeva Goswami described that Sudama Vipra lived on those beautiful conditions in loving memory of Krishna. And a few years later, he and his wife left this mortal world for the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, where they attained the eternal destination of the soul. And exactly what was available to Sudama Vipra is factually available to everyone today. If we simply make Krishna the center of our life, if we simply associate with holy people who remind us that Krishna is the goal of life, the association of sadhus is the most valuable, precious attainment that one can achieve in life. Because through that association, we can understand the love of Krishna for his devotees. And we can understand the nature of the love within our own heart for Krishna. And the greatest welfare work, the greatest charity, the greatest expression of friendship and love is to share Krishna with another. Therefore, we are very pleased with the host of our evening tonight, whose house we are now so graciously enjoying Krishna Katha. And we should know that he has properly understood what is the greatest charity, what is the greatest friendship and greatest love. To invite friends, visitors, well-wishers to come into one's home, to chant the glories of the Lord, to hear the glories of the Lord, to taste the prasadam of the Lord, to associate with one another on this purest level of social interaction. This is the greatest charity. This is the greatest friendship. This is the greatest expression of love. And this is really the fulfillment of the duty of the Grihastha Ashram. That whatever we have, from time to time, let us share it with everyone for the glorification of God. That is the success of our life. That is the purification of our house, the purification of our family, the purification of our existence. So we are very much grateful this evening for our kind host, for giving us this opportunity of coming into his and her most beautiful house and decorating it with all of these most magnanimous, effulgent guests who have all come very anxiously to perfect their lives by hearing the glories of the Lord. Spiritual life is very simple. Simply by always being anxious to find Krishna within our heart through the association of devotees and share Krishna with others, we can attain the supreme perfection of life. And the common denominator, according to all the great scriptures, by which we can exchange the pure presence of Krishna, is the congregational chanting of his holy name. Sankirtan means when we come together to glorify the Lord by discussing his pastimes, by discussing his philosophy, and especially by chanting his names. Then we create the atmosphere of Vaikuntha wherever we are. Tonight, this house has become Vaikuntha. And this is confirmed by all the Shastra. Yasya, what is that verse? Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. Krishna tells Narada Muni that you will not find me in the caves where the yogis are meditating. You will not find me in the universities where the jnanis are studying their scripture. You will not find me where the great kings are offering sacrifices and jagga. But wherever an assembly of my devotees come together to chant my holy names, I will always be in that place. I choose to be there better than anywhere else. Where there is high philosophy being spoken, I am not so attracted. But where the simple hearts of my devotees are simply glorifying my names, I cannot resist from running to that place. And this is a fact. Krishna is Vaikunthanath. He is the Lord of Vaikuntha. He is Vrindavanath. He never takes one step out of Vrindavan. The fact is, wherever the devotees gather together to hear the glories of the Lord and to chant his holy names, that place is Vaikuntha. That place is Goloka Vrindavan. We may not have the vision to perceive it, but if we just stay in the holy dham long enough, we will develop that vision. Huh? So tonight, my friends, you are in Vaikuntha. You are in Vrindavan. In truth, in fact, it is the word of God, and Krishna is here. So let us take these opportunities as much as possible to associate on this level. It is really the opening of the doors to the highest perfection of life. Thank you.